Is the power of choice a gift of God, but a gift with some frightening overtones? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm Alden Thompson, your host for this series on health and healing. My conversation partners are two health professionals from Walla Walla Valley, Carl Bauer, an MD with a specialty in gastroenterology and a master's in nutrition, and Donna Chin, RN, a registered dietitian, also with a master's in nutrition. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Now, our theme for this week is the power of choice. And in my leading question, I suggested that it's a gift of God, but there are some frightening overtones. If I have to choose, to what extent does that choice, where does that weigh in the balances in terms of what God is? Now, another question is related to that. Maybe we could go to that one first. Is good health something we can actually choose?
Yes, I think it is. And certainly we all want to have good health, but we aren't always in control of the factors that determine health. And our genetic endowment is sometimes such that we cannot choose to have good health because of that. And so to the extent possible, we should do everything we can do to have good health. But there are circumstances when that will not bring good health.
Mm-hmm. Now, last week, Donna, you mentioned that there was a friend that had not used the power of choice. And so at a point in her life, there was nothing she could really do. But taking a normal human being, not one who's at the end of life, but who is, you know, somewhere in the middle, would it be safe to generalize and say virtually everyone can make a significant difference in their health by their choices?
I would like to believe so.
Yeah.
I would like to believe that we have some element of opportunity to influence, and far too many of us may use our genetic background as an excuse rather than as a springboard for opportunity. And while I believe what you said, Carl, I also believe that I have heard many a client whine about it's because I have, you know, family background. It's my family. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm overweight because my family is, not because of the choices that we as a family make. So just.
There is that interesting wrinkle. Once you allow for circumstances, people will take an enormous advantage from that. I remember Donna Coffeen telling about, and she was working with a juvenile detention center down here, and a kid came up to her and said, Mrs. Coffeen, I have ADD. And she simply said, not here you don't. Because they did not make allowance for those kinds of excuses there, and it made a huge difference. I heard a story once, I didn't see this one for real, but a little 8-year-old girl was being asked to do something by her parents or her teacher. And she says, I can't do that. That's not in my temperament profile. So we do face this problem, though. We don't simply take advantage because we think, well, you know, there's nothing I can do about it. But I've been amazed what people can do once they put their mind to it. And if they recognize that there are real advantages for other people, that makes a huge difference. Now, another question I'd like to ask, to what extent is guilt or the fear of guilt an effective motivator?
I don't think it's a long-term motivator. I think actually guilt has its value. I think it is a check in your spirit, and I think that it can be something that is can actually turn you in the direction, if you choose that, mm-hmm. for positive change. However, used consistently, it becomes a hammer that most of us would begin to tune out.
Mm-hmm. So a long-term effect is not very good, but you're thinking short-term, it might be helpful.
I believe we have it internally for a valuable reason.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah. I know there are certain cases where my guilt feelings prevent me from doing certain things that I might do otherwise, simply because I don't want to cope with that, and I'm grateful for those kinds of things that prevent me from getting myself into difficulty. Now, another question I'd like to raise, and here against the backdrop of the story of Abraham, because our lesson study guide, the standard lesson study guide, uses Abraham as an illustration. What about those things that we do not know but are still damaging? Now, the illustration that's used is Abraham's polygamy. Abraham took a second wife, and there's no indication in the story that he considered it to be wrong. In fact, I had a little gal once who was reading the story of Abraham all the way through, and I wanted her to give me the reaction, and I had a hard time getting that out of her. When I finally did, she said, I was just astonished. She says, I'd always been taught that it's wrong to take a second wife. And I was waiting for God to tell Abraham that it was wrong. But he never did. So when you're dealing with people, and my guess is that when you're dealing in health matters, there are certain things that you'd probably like to tell people, but you can't yet because it would be too heavy a burden. Is that true? Does that work with health stuff as well?
There is timing.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have to work with people where they are. And if we aren't able to communicate at the level where they are, then it's impossible to get them to change.
Mm-hmm.
So that Paul says, you know, if when you're in Rome, you do as the Romans do, and so on. And I think that covers an immense amount of territory. When you see someone who has bad nutritional habits, for instance, and yet has no idea about what they're doing as being wrong, you have to sit down with them and talk about these things and do some educating and some broadening of the understanding base in order to allow them to make positive choices.
Mm-hmm. And if you dump too much on them at once, the eyes glaze over and
right.
They just shrug.
Right.
I face that all the time in writing classes in particular. And it's always an awkward choice because if I don't correct something in a draft, then the student is likely to tell me, you didn't mark that. I thought it was okay. But if I mark too much, then the student just simply gives up. I remember once I marked a paper for, not a student, but he was a staff member, gave me a paper to read. And I'm a very competitive person. When I give a paper to someone, I want them to write it up and mark it up. And so I gave this the thorough treatment. And he thanked me for that. But I found out later that the poor fellow was just about crushed because he didn't really want a thorough critique with everything marked. And so I think that is a problem that we have to face. We can't tell everything to a person that we might want them to know.
I'm not sure that we always, in our human abilities, know when that is. And I think that is where the influence of the Holy Spirit can give
yes.
us a check as to where and how much yeah. and all those sorts of things.
One of my favorite Ellen White quotations is an amazing one where she's talking to a brother who I think was probably a bit more overconfident in his ability to make those decisions. But he says, you need to educate yourself that you may have wisdom to deal with minds. You should with some have a compassion, making a difference, while others you may say with fear, snatching them out of the fire. Then the next sentence, he says, our Lord frequently leaves us in uncertainty in regard to our efforts. If I pound the table too much after I made a decision, then nobody's going to be able to talk to me. But if I say, I think this is the best way to go, please tell me if I'm not right, then we can work together. But you're right, Donna, there's just no way that we can just automatically say this is the right person, the right thing for that particular person. Yeah.
And sometimes when we have not taken the time to understand where a person is coming from and have alienated them as a result, it's important for us to come back and say, you know, I was wrong in the way mm-hmm. I approached that with you. And I need to give you time to understand, and I need to be more gentle with you. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to do that. Sometimes we find being humble to be a loss of sense of control. And so mm-hmm. we don't take advantage of the fact that we must communicate to a person on the level where they are.
Yeah. And what is scary is if a person comes from an authoritarian background, that person may not be prepared to accept an apology.
Right.
I know there was a man, one of the church leaders in Holland, where they have European pastors, but they also have immigrant pastors. And he says in the immigrant culture, if a pastor admits he's wrong, he loses his influence. And that's so very difficult for us. My colleague, former colleague John Brunt, tells a story when he was in Mexico. dealing with master's level preachers, highly motivated. And he came in one day, and instead of getting 90% generally, there was one question where they'd about half of them had missed it. And so he listened a bit, and he said, we'll not count that question. See? The next day, three of the students went to talk to the translator and said, please tell our teacher never to do that again, because he will lose the confidence of the students. So in the West, we are much more, and the New Testament pattern is you need to be absolutely honest and straightforward. Jesus' example there is just wonderful. But in authoritarian cultures, it is much more difficult to move in and then say, I made a mistake. Otherwise, they'll just lose the contract. Now, there's another aspect that we need to deal with here in our lesson. The motivation provided by the knowledge of what we do will affect our children after us. Deuteronomy chapter 30. Verses 10 to 19, a pretty heavy load there, that what we do affects our children. Again, I would be interested in your reaction in your dealing with patients. To what extent does the effect on posterity, children, is that a stronger motivation than just generally affecting people? Once you touch the children, is that something that awakens them more than just the general effect on people in general?
In some cases, I find that to be true. The opportunity to change the family tree and the family dynamics as far as health, and it's seen by some as an opportunity, especially some moms who begin to grasp the idea that they actually have the influence they do over both their husband and their children. Many a gentleman has laid in his hospital bed and looked up at me and said, you know, talk to her. She does the cooking. And I will look at him and say, but you lift your fork to the mouth. And if you don't eat it, she won't cook it. And that usually is a huge turning point if they're going to take some direction or redirection, if you will, of deciding of who actually has the say. And so I find that, and I oftentimes do insist that when I worked pediatrics, that the parents do have control, at least in the younger years, of what the children eat. And they would often say to me, but they will only eat this, this, and this. And I would say, you know, look around your counters. They will eat what they see. They will eat what they see you eating. You have the opportunity to change this. Because if your children don't know that exists, or, you know, maybe they're watching television with this kind of advertising. But if your children don't know this exists and they only realize that the only thing to eat is oatmeal versus, you know, some sugar-based cereal, it's amazing how children tend to eat what's put in front of them. Mm-hmm. So I believe that a lot of parents really don't even think of it as being something that really impacts down the road. I don't think that initially comes up in your mind.
In that connection, let me ask kind of as a sideline here. America is known for being terribly overweight. Are we making any progress there, Carl?
Not much. It's going in the opposite direction that it should be going. And there are hundreds of reasons why.
Yeah. Now, I heard you say once before that a major reason for that is all the soft drinks and juices with high amounts of sugar makes a real difference.
Including fruit juice.
As a result of listening to you, I think I drink a whole lot more water and a lot less fruit juice as a result of that. But that is something which we need to understand. Our time is up now, so our technician is waving at us. We want to thank Carl and Donna for their help. Next week, we'll continue our discussions. My thanks to Michael White, our program engineer, and to all of you for listening in. For the Good Word, I'm Alden Thompson. If you would like to have access to Good Word programs online, I would suggest that you go to Positive Life Radio website, plr.org, look under Programs, Good Word. There you will find a full reference of the programs that we have done for this quarter and for previous ones as well.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.